Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you. And we continue to hold you in the light. Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you. And we continue to hold you in the light.
I just want to ask, do you folks have a hard time hearing me when that fan comes on? You do? No? Huh? It's off? Okay, good. All right. So before we start this morning, I just want to share a thought with you from the college. The federal government has this thing now with colleges that kids are coming out of school not really fully comprehending everything they've learned from an application standpoint. So they started this thing now where we had to create program outcomes. Like I'm the kind of the key professor for marketing, so I had to create program outcomes, which saying these are the outcomes when you graduate, you should know these outcomes. And then we had to create course outcomes, and then we had to create assessments. The assessments have to match those outcomes. So no matter whatever other exams or assignments we give, we have to give this departmental assessment exam, and all the questions are lined up with those outcomes. Okay, so for us, our program outcomes are on the back of your bulletin. And what do you think they are? They're the five unity principles. Those are the program outcomes. Those are the things, if somebody stopped you on the street and says, what does unity believe? You should know those outcomes. And next week, I'm going to give you the kids' version of it, all right, which is very simple to say and quick. So all of my talks then, and they've always have been, but I want you to realize that all of my talks are tied to one or more of those outcomes every Sunday. Does that make sense? Okay, all right. Another thing I just wanted, this is sort of like a commercial, I just want to share, I mean, Joy and I were talking about things that come to me during the week that I say to myself, I should be on Facebook so I could just send those out to everybody, all right? And this anywhere from, you know, two warriors, martial arts, what, fighting, and one says something, I go, oh, that was deep, let me write that down, I need to send that out, you know? But one of the things I just read, and again, I'm just sharing this as information, not as something that's, how do I want to put it? It's a truth, but right now you may not grasp it as a fact. Does that make sense? Okay. One of the books I'm reading was talking about this idea of the law of averages. This doesn't have anything, well, it has to do with the talk, but it's kind of an aside. And the law of averages says that when you operate from low levels of consciousness, you fall more into being affected by the law of averages, and more accidents and turmoil and stuff comes up in your life. It's sort of the thing where you say, why is that happening to me? Or why is that happening to them? You know, so when you're operating from low levels of consciousness, and I'll explain that in a minute, you're more apt to be affected by the law of averages. As you rise to higher levels of consciousness, you are less and less affected by the law of averages. So to make it make sense to you, for me, it's always going back to that chart from Dr. David Hawkins, from 0 to 1,000, where those low levels are anger, fear, resentment, jealousy, revenge, all of those kinds of dynamics are low levels of consciousness that are below the level of 200, okay? So if you find yourself dealing with, if those things are kind of in your core thinking for some reason, though that guilt and all those things that, again, the first time we saw them in the Bible was with Adam and Eve. You know, they were ashamed. You know, they felt guilty. But if you're operating at those levels, there's a tendency for you to be affected more by the law of averages. You get it? You all right? So the whole purpose of the talks that we do and the things we do here in the thing is to raise us to a higher level so that we are less affected by those dynamics. Okay? So anyway, that's just something for you to think about. So again, we're still exploring the depths of our being, you know, exploring the depths of your being, as the title actually says. And we're continuing on the same path as the last two lessons by exploring the depths of our being, then matching that to the truth that we uncover by studying the scriptures in the Bible, okay? So we're seeking to discover the power within us. What did we just say when Pam led us? There was a power within us that is far greater than anything that exists outside of us. So we're seeking to discover the power within us by exploring the mysteries of revelation, hoping we can demystify them and then help us to realize that those really is symbolism. All that you read in Revelation is really symbolism, describing the unfolding realization of our innate divine potential. Okay, and Revelation is purely symbolic, but the symbolism in it is designed as a summation of all that's in the Bible before it. Okay, and if you get to Revelation, you read it, and you're going to go, oh, this makes absolutely no sense. That means you need to go back to the other parts of the Bible and be trying to understand that. You know, you get what I'm saying? You know, it's like if you have a calculus textbook that has 10 chapters in it, and you go to chapter 10, you go, oh, that made no sense, right? It means you need to go back to chapter 1, right? And I think I told you that, you know, three of the books I'm studying now, and if I haven't said this before, it's just good for you to know, the language is so dense, especially like Thomas Troward. His language and writing is so dense that what I do on the Kindle is I can highlight it and then tap on it, and then the Kindle will read it back to me, all right? And sometimes when I'm reading, I'm going, what the heck? You know, and then when I tap on it and it's being read back to me, I go, oh, I think I got that. But I'm really, you know, if getting it is here, I got it here, all right? And then the next night, I might come back and read it again and go, I think I got that a little bit more. You know, so that's sort of the unfolding nature of the process. So anyway, in the book, Revelation, The Road to Overcoming, it says that the metaphysical interpretation of Revelation is based on the belief that humankind is growing and unfolding in a spiritual way, all right? And one day will attain recognition of its essential oneness with the one creative cause of the universe, whom we call God. Our premise is that Jesus Christ knew his oneness with God, and he taught that this awareness is also our destiny. As it's recorded in John 17:21, that they all may be one, even as thou, Father, art in me and I in thee. Okay. So to quote from a study taken from the Unity School of Religious Science, I don't even know if that's available anymore. It's like in a loose leaf that we're selling it. It says, Revelation describes the continued unfoldment of a soul after an individual has accepted and come into the metaphysical teachings of Jesus Christ. Let me say it again. Revelation describes the continued unfoldment of a soul after an individual has accepted and come into the metaphysical truth of Jesus Christ. Okay, so there is an indication that some work must be done before one can begin to comprehend truth hidden in the symbolism in Revelation. Because as the quote says, you can only understand the mystical message in Revelation after you've accepted and come into the metaphysical truth of Jesus Christ. Okay? So the metaphysical truth of Jesus Christ transcends the biographical account of Jesus as we hear mostly in Christianity. You've heard me say this before. Most in Christianity, we study the teachings of Moses in the biography of Jesus. All right, and you've heard me say that before. Because it's easy to understand the teachings of Jesus, the teachings of Moses, you know, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not. Okay, and we're very good at following what we're told not to do, okay? But it's hard for us to believe and embrace the metaphysical spiritual being that we are. So if somebody says, thou shalt not, we'll go, oh, yeah, maybe I shouldn't do that. But if somebody says, you know, you're a spiritual being, you go, oh, yeah, nah, I don't get that. All right? So in addition, the first level of metaphysical truth taught by Jesus is that you are responsible for your life. Remember in the first talk in the series I gave, it said the master was talking. He said something, and the answer came back. He said, what is the great mystery of the universe? I don't know what it was. And the answer came back, says, who? And the who is me. You know, I am the mystery. Okay, so Jesus teaches you're responsible for your life, not God and not the devil. God has placed within us the power of life, and it is our work to choose the power of life to receive the full benefit that God has given us. Now, as I quoted many times before from Deuteronomy 30:20, oh, that you would choose life so that you might live. Choose to love the Lord your God and to obey him and commit yourself to him, for he is your life. Now, the problem we may have with that, the metaphysical truth of this statement, he is your life, can easily get lost in the pronoun he. There is no he, but there is a divine intelligence that permeates the universe, not as he or she, but as the totality of everything that is. And as it's recorded in Revelation 1:17, the divine intelligence touched John. And I should have said in the beginning, this is the revelation to John. Okay, so when we look at Revelation, you say, well, where'd it come from? It's a revelation to John. But historians don't know if that's John the disciple or who that is. They just know it's a revelation to John. Okay, so it says in 1:17, the divine intelligence touched John and said, do not be afraid. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last. I am the living one. Basically saying that I am what you think and I am what you produce through what you think. And I am everything, all the causations in between what you think and what you produce. I am all that there is. At least on a surface level. Okay, all right. So let me just explain a little bit about divine intelligence. So to clarify, divine intelligence comes from divine mind. Divine mind is God mind, which is ever-present, all-knowing, absolute, unlimited, all-wise, all-loving, all-powerful. Now, we're going to do this again. God mind is ever-present. Say it with me. All-knowing, absolute, unlimited, all-wise, all-loving, all-powerful. All right? And to be redundant, it is omnipresent, meaning everywhere present as a presence. There is nowhere that I can be that God is not. Okay? So the power within me is always there, always active, always alive, always being what it is. Okay? So divine intelligence works through, and listen carefully, divine intelligence works through the avenue of the limited capacities of the mental attitude we call intellect. Let me say that again. Divine intelligence works through the avenue of the limited capacities of the mental attitude we call intellect. Now, when we become capable of letting go of the boundaries that we have formed around our intellect, we will catch sight of the infinite knowing within us, which is divine wisdom. So right now, you know, we all have an intellect, but we've all put boundaries around what we know. Oh, this is all I can know. Do you know in 1948, the patent office was going to close because they said everything that man has ever invented has already been invented? That's crazy, isn't it? All right. So that's what we do, though. We put these boundaries around our intellects, and this is what I know. This is the sum total of the body of knowledge that I have. But the key here is when you can break those boundaries, then you open yourself up to the infinite. And that's what Albert Einstein did. He said, by reading and studying, I'm creating a boundary around what I know. So he stopped reading and studying and just opened himself up to the universe. All right? So, you know, where we are in consciousness right now, it is important to realize that the divine intelligence within you is seeking to express as you. So wherever you are right now, you say, man, I don't know how to figure this out. I don't know what's going on in my life. I don't know about this. I don't know about that. You need to stop. Because the divine intelligence is seeking to press through you as you and let you know what the next step is. My favorite Bible verse right now is right on the front of my computer. It's Exodus 14:14. And it says, I will rescue you. I will fight for you. All you have to do is be still. And I put that right on my computer. So when your mind is, you know, struggling with this, that, and the other thing, it's saying, you don't have to do that. All right. I will fight for you, but you just need to be still. Okay. And we're going to talk about where that stillness leads to, but that's the first thing that has to happen. Okay. So anyway, this divine intelligence is trying to express through you as you. And as the scripture in Deuteronomy explained, you must choose it and you must choose to love it, to obey it and commit yourself to it because it is your life. You're choosing the very essence of your being when you choose to be still and know that I am God. Okay, and simply, if you do not choose to commit yourself to the guidance of the divine intelligence within you, that is the love that permeates, sustains, renews, and heals every fiber of your being, then your only other choice is the intelligence of your ego, which is usually capable of recognizing the facts of life, but not always capable of recognizing and understanding the truth expressing in your life. See, that's why we depend on our intellect, because we can say, oh, yeah, I know that's the deal. That's the fact. And it is. That's the fact. But you're not allowing yourself to be exposed to the truth that's in that fact. Why is this thing happening in my life? Why is this thing happening in my country? Why is this thing happening in the world? You have to be always be open to the truth. And so the whole book of Revelation is a story of the journey of the human soul facing the choice between a life in the spiritual or a continued life in the personal. Is which do you want? Okay? And this is not to negate the necessity of the personal life. Right? The personal self is important. We know Jesus as a personal self. You know, we know that he laughed. We know that he engaged with folks. Right? And so we know the personal self of Jesus. But he also said the Son of Man must be lifted up to the Son of God, meaning the personal self must eventually enter into a conscious understanding of the spiritual self. All right? And when I begin to understand the truth of my spiritual self, my personal self takes on a whole different demeanor, a whole different way of being. And again, from the book of Revelation, The Road to Overcoming, we read, the most important fact to keep in mind when dealing with an interpretation of Revelation to John is that no matter how fantastic or complex the language of the narrative becomes, it is always talking about a single soul, which would be any human being who has committed his or herself to live according to the truths revealed by Jesus. It's always talking about me. It's always talking about you. But let's be clear. Living according to the truth principles taught by Jesus is not an intellectual decision. All right? It is more about making the choice to surrender to the power of wisdom that dwells within you. However, one does not negate the other. In other words, all the studying and contemplating and reading and things that we do, okay, that's all good. All right? The intellect rises and then surrenders into the Christ. So that's why John the Baptist, you heard me say this 1,000 times, who represents the intellect at its highest level of understanding on a human level, said that he must increase and I must decrease. So when the intellect gets to a certain level, it begins to realize, no, this is not about me. All right? I need to let go and let God. Okay? But know that real understanding, you know, the real understanding comes as a gift from the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit cannot give you that gift, though, of understanding if you do not show a willingness to hear and understand and live by the truth that you receive. Okay? It's recorded in 1 Corinthians 2:12-16. Now we have received not the spirit of the world. Now we have received not the spirit of the world. In other words, God didn't give you the spirit of the world. The ego chose the spirit of the world. Right now we operate from the spirit of the world. Am I right? Okay. So we operate from those. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is from God, that we might understand the gifts bestowed on us by God. And we impart this in words not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting truths to those who possess the Spirit. And it goes on to say, the unspiritual man does not receive the gifts of the Spirit of God, for they are folly to him. And he is not able to understand them because they must be spiritually discerned. But we have the mind of Christ. We have the mind of Christ. We have the mind of Christ. Say it. I have the mind of Christ. I have the mind of Christ. Okay. The thing we're trying to learn is, how do I tap into and use that mind? That's what we're working on. Okay. So the spirit of the world is the reasoning power of the human intellect. And as good as it may be, it can only take us so far. With all the technology that we have now, and the technology that is coming, it still only can take us so far. I think I described to you that in retailing, there's a design coming out now, they're experimenting with in Europe. Did I tell you about this? When you walk into a store, and when you walk into a store, it scans your body. And it says, oh, this is a male, about 69 years old, African-American, blah, 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 blah. And it does all of this, and then it redesigns the wall of the store to fit what it perceives that you are. And if you're walking up and you're not paying attention, you're not reaching up trying to touch something, it'll keep changing that wall until it hits what it is that it believes that you are. And then when you want to try it on, then you create an avatar. You've seen now, you can go, there's a mirror. You stand in front of the mirror creates an avatar of you, and you can keep changing clothes in that avatar, whatever, not ever taking your clothes off. And then when you say, I do want to try this on, something comes down out of the ceiling and surrounds you so you can change your clothes and it goes back up. That's where technology is going. It is. Yeah. All right? Yeah. So the key here is, as great as the human intellect is, it still can only take us so far. Okay? So, whereas the spirit of God, what we're calling divine intelligence, is a divine knowing that is already within us, waiting for us to turn to it. And this is what Jesus was referring to when he said, let those who have ears listen. And he's not talking about our physical ears. He's saying that inner ear. He said, listen to that spirit within you that's already within you, trying to give you the guidance that you're looking for. However, as it's expressed in Scripture that we read in 1 Corinthians, again, what I said before, the unspiritual man does not receive the gifts of the Spirit of God, for they are folly to him. Meaning, it's not that they're not given to the unspiritual person. It's that the spiritual person doesn't even know anything's going on. Okay? It said, he's not able to understand them because they must be spiritually discerned. And remember, the language of God is silence. The language of God is silence, all right? And the key to grasping the meaning of this passage is to understand what it means. The key to this, if we need to understand what is a spiritual person, okay? The unspiritual person, of course, is he or she who is trapped in the perception of the ego, which even though the ego's perception may be based on fact, still these perceptions typically do not unveil the truth. Is that okay? Now, the concept of being a spiritual person is a good concept to explore because you often hear someone refer to someone as being a spiritual person, or you hear them talking about other folks. Oh, yeah, that's a very spiritual person. Okay, you think to yourself, you have to ask it: do you see yourself as being a spiritual person? Okay, or even if you find yourself saying, "Oh, this is a very spiritual person," if somebody asks you to describe that, how would you describe it? You know what I'm saying? How would you say, why do you think you're spiritual? Or why do you think that person is spiritual? How would you describe that? Well, I think most people will attempt to describe being spiritual as a series of compassionate acts, a pious, quiet demeanor. The person reads a lot of books, you know, has a lot of knowledge about spiritual things, okay? You know, we have all these different ways that we describe it again, but you're just quoting facts. You know, what is the real essence? You know, the meaning of spiritual may be, as Paul described it in Corinthians, being spiritual is being spiritual. It's more of a heart-centered state of being than it is acts of doing or the possession of great knowledge. All right? It's just what we have said it is. It is being spiritual. It is being in a compassionate, mental, emotional place of oneness, a mental, emotional place of centeredness. You are centered all the time. Even though you might get flustered for a minute, you know where your center is and how to get back to it. Right? Because I don't care how strong you are, stuff is going to happen. Stuff is going to happen. It's going to knock you off that center. But if you are not centered in the first place, you don't have a place to get back to. All right? So being spiritual is being able to remain centered in the kingdom of heaven awareness in the midst of life, whether that moment is particularly challenging or not. Being spiritual is being open and receptive to God's living spirit of truth, so much so that it's your go-to mind. Being open and receptive to God's living spirit of truth becomes your go-to mind. Think to yourself right now, what is your go-to mind? Stuff happens. What do? Where do you go? You get what I'm saying? And everybody here knows what I'm talking about, right? Stuff happens right away. It's like, where do you go to? But if you're really a spiritual person, your go-to mind is the kingdom of heaven. Your go-to mind is being centered in God. Your go-to mind is being open and receptive to the living spirit of truth that is within you right there, knowing what you needed even before you turned to it. All right? Is all that making sense? Okay. So regardless of the reaction to life circumstances you choose to regroup or recenter yourself to, you want to remain alert to the divine guidance that will percolate up inside of you. Even if you find yourself still, stuff happens and you react to it the way you always react, at least recognize that that's what you do and say to yourself, I've just did it. All right, so I satisfied that. Now let me be still because there is something percolating up within me that is going to give me the guidance that I need. You follow me? So it's not that we perfect being spiritual, is that we understand the dynamics of it, and if we don't have that place to go to because we haven't quite gotten there yet, we at least know that we can recognize that we did that thing we always do, and now what I need to do is just become still. And in that stillness, the guidance you need will percolate up inside of you. You will feel it. This does not mean that we do not acknowledge our own thoughts and feelings or reactions to life circumstances. That's really important, all right? Because we are, after all, having a human experience. You know, the thing I love to talk about is, you know, when they came to Jesus and said, you know, Lazarus, your friend is dying. And Jesus said, yeah, well, I'll be there in a minute. You know, they said, well, no, we need you to come now. He's dying. He goes, when I get there, it'll be the right time. And he comes there because he knows what he's going to do. He knows he has the power of God. He can raise Lazarus from the dead. He knows it. But when he gets there and he sees, you know, Mary and Mary crying, weeping, what did he do? He wept also. The human experience. Is that making sense? All right. So, again, it doesn't mean that you don't remain alert. It means you want to remain alert to the truth that God is in charge. And when you think about yourself, what does it mean that God is in charge? It means that faith is in charge, love is in charge, wisdom is in charge. Those things that you, words you use to describe God in your life, knowing that thing is in charge, all right? To be spiritual is to commit to living the contemplative life. Now, the reason why I'm hesitating is because I looked that up to see what the contemplative life is, and I found a woman who was very upset with that statement, the contemplative life. And I liked what she had to say. She said the contemplative life back in the days of old in the Bible were people who did just that, priests and whatnot. They just sat around and contemplated God all the time. So they're comparing the contemplative life to the active life. You get it? Okay. Well, back in the days of the Bible, the only people who could live that kind of life were the priests, who people took care of them, and the wealthy. But the normal folks had to be in the active life. They had to work for a living, you know, get out there and do their thing, okay? But if you study Jesus' teachings were about the active life. In other words, it's almost like diabolically opposed to the contemplative life, but what he's saying is that I want you to be contemplative in life. I want you to go do your thing that you normally do, but be contemplative in that process. Not sit off in a monastery somewhere. You know, the apostolic life. You have to be apostle. You have to be out there doing, being this spiritual idea. So, and the word contemplate means to look at attentively and thoughtfully. It means to meditate on or ponder from a spiritual or metaphysical perspective the many decisions that life presents to you. So stuff comes to you. Instead of having a reaction, you just become still to try to understand what's the dynamics of this that just happened. Even if you go outside to get ready to get in your car and your tire's flat, or whatever it might be, you just be still. All right? Get out your jack up the car, change the tire if you can, right? But just be still. That's the whole idea, okay? So the best way I can think to clarify these two opposing ideas is by way of the Quaker prayer. As you pray, move your feet. As you contemplate, move. Be active into life. The contemplation or the prayer is you're being open and receptive to receiving God's living spirit of truth. Once you received it, then move into your life with that guidance. Okay? So is this sounding practical? Okay. Now, yes, I agree that not everything that occurs in our life seems to need contemplation. It does, I need new toilet paper. Let me contemplate about this. I mean, just go out and get it, right? So not everything needs contemplation. But it's interesting to note that quite often the things that occur in our lives that create havoc often could have been avoided if we had paid more attention to the little things in life. You get it? All right? Like that pinging in your car that's been going on forever and you don't take it to the mechanic, right? The little things sometimes you pay attention to avoids you having to have these big issues that you have to deal with. So the simplest practice is one we have discussed before. It is to remain mindful that no matter what occurs in your, whatever occurs, you remain centered in the power and presence of the Holy Spirit. And to quote a line from this movie that I was watching, the spiritual master said to a student, to focus on yourself, your aim should be to know yourself apart from the world. And see, the whole marketing industry is based on tying you into others, other dynamics. I need to be like that. I need that car. I need that. Whatever. You follow what I'm saying? That's the whole dynamic. So, who am I apart from the world? Okay? And then the real challenge to being spiritual is realizing that you are being called a co-creator of a new world. Let me say that again. When you think of yourself as being spiritual, if you really believe you are spiritual, you're being called to be a co-creator of a new world. In Revelation 1:1, the Revelation 2 of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants things which are shortly to come. Okay? And these things that are shortly to come are a new world, a new way of thinking, a new way of being. The whole movement, science of mind, religious science, unity, all these things, they're all called what? New thought, okay? There's a whole new world. So who are the servants to whom Jesus is to show the revelation that God gave to him? Well, of course, we are. We have the potential of being co-creators of a new world order. However, being a co-creator with Jesus of a new world order is a choice that we have to make. You have to make the choice to want to do that. In the same movie, this grand master said to his student, to change the world, first change yourself. Then your part in changing the world is finished. Okay? We are co-creators by spiritual design, but we have unknowingly created another design, a persona that remembers nothing about our being divine. So the spiritual journey is about remembering our original design. It's getting back to the original self. It's similar to the lesson I gave a couple of weeks ago where God is looking for Adam and Eve. He's calling out, Adam, Eve, where are you? All right. He said, that's kind of silly for God to be looking for Adam and Eve. But what was happening was God was looking for Adam and Eve where they were supposed to be. In spiritual consciousness, in spiritual awareness. They were out of that spiritual awareness, so God could not find them, so to speak, because they weren't where they were supposed to be. It's the same thing with us, all right? We need to get back to that place where we are supposed to be. And just stay with me. I got a little bit more. You guys with me? Okay, all right. So how much time do we spend praying while looking in the wrong direction? We look to blame people and outer events for our circumstances, even though we have learned in our lives that blame never heals anything. It's recorded in Revelation 1, 10 through 11 that John said, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet. Then I turned to see that the voice was speaking to me. And when John heard, what John heard was a voice resounding from within his own head, within his own being, causing him to turn his attention back towards the Christ. So what was happening is when who has ever had that experience? You're all wrapped up in something going on out here, and all of a sudden something, and it could be anything, a friend, a spouse, a child, a dog barking, whatever, calling you back, saying, whoa, you have gone way off the reservation. Right? And it's time to come back to this space. And you say, well, how do I get back? All you need to do is what? Be still. Enter into the silence. And it's the same for each one of us. We have the potential that has shown, what's been shown to us by Jesus, that we lack the confidence to allow ourselves to come back. As we just said, in the mental emotion state we presently find ourselves in, the reason why Revelation seems so crazy to us is because we're not in the place we're supposed to be that it was written to. It was written to a certain mind, all right? But Jesus understood that. Jesus said, I understand that. That's why I do deeds today, but my words are forever, because you will enter into the consciousness where you can understand it. Okay? Now, I want to read for you from Barbara Marx Hubbard. How many people know Barbara Marx Hubbard? Okay, in her book, Revelation, Our Crisis is a Birth, she's giving us an insight into why it's so difficult for us to believe that we are as divine as Jesus. Okay, and this is what she says. Imagine yourselves at the next stage of human evolution with all of your capacities operating harmoniously. You in your future will be as different from yourself in the present as you today are different from the Homo sapiens several hundred thousand years ago. Now imagine how your early ancestors would describe you if you visited them in their caves, driving up your jets and your car, fancy cars, dressed in your fancy clothes with your calculated watches, smartphones, digital cameras, iPads, computers, and so on. To them, you would be indescribable and unbelievable. They would write incredible descriptions of you on the walls of their caves. They would think of you as spirits, as gods to be feared and placated. And if you tried to speak to them to assure them that they could do what you do and greater, you would have difficulty narrowing your language sufficiently to suit their unlimited experience of their own latent potential. It would be hard for them to believe they had the capacity to do as you do, even greater. Isn't that a powerful example? Okay? And so this analogy had a profound impact on me because for the first time it made sense as to why we find it so difficult to grasp Jesus' teachings as he was trying to describe them. And also you got to remember, he was speaking in Aramaic. That's a very limited language. It's a pictorial language. That's why he kept saying that, the kingdom of heaven is like, and he would give descriptions because there were not many words that he could use to describe this powerful message he was trying to give. Right, but we would be like that. We are trying to get into the mindset when we can comprehend something that is outside of the realm of our existing intellect. Okay, and that's what Jesus is referring to when he says, "My deeds are for today, but my words are forever." All right. Now, Jesus is the mirror through which we can see our own Christ potential. So I invite every one of us to reflect on the idea of this analogy. Just as you would be baffled and couldn't understand why your Homo sapien ancestors could not grasp the possibilities that you were showing them, it is the same reason why we're having a hard time grasping the possibilities that I'm basically a spiritual being having a human experience. Okay? And I'm going to end with this reading from Science of Mind magazine. And all the affirmations, I don't know anybody who's looking at Science of Mind magazine for the month of January, but all of the affirmations started with this. The divine good fulfills me, always has, always will. I access it every day. Every affirmation started with that. I want you to say it with me. I'm going to tell you one at a time. So, the divine good fulfills me. Always has. Always will. And I access it every day. And then this one for January 27th went on to say, new insights come to me from every direction. And through the vast infinite mind within me, I love, value, and embrace every opportunity for spiritual expansion. Amen.